My name is Jeff Lerner, and I interview elite performers from a wide range of disciplines, entrepreneurs, athletes, celebrities, scientists, artists, and more. This is Unlock Your Potential. Welcome to another episode of Unlock Your Potential. Jeff Lerner, your host. Always so grateful to be back with you, having amazing conversations with amazing human beings. Today, we are joined by yet another one, Jim Oliver. He is the host of the Breakaway Wealth podcast. He is also the world's foremost authority on the infinite banking concept, which I can vouch. That's not just a thing that it says in his bio, because I have been a big fan and practitioner of the infinite banking concept for over a decade now, I think. And throughout my experience with that concept, I have heard his name mentioned multiple times as sort of a primary source and authority in this space. And basically, he's out there evangelizing this technique and this financial, well, I'll let him explain what it is, but financial method. And it's freaking awesome. And man, I'm just going to stop right there, Jim. Rather than me try to tell them your bio, let's just hear from you. How are you? Welcome to the show.
Thanks. I'm doing great, Jeff. Thanks for having me. And I'm excited to talk to the audience and share some things I've learned along the way and some insights to infinite banking that I learned directly from Nelson Nash that have changed my life and the lives of a lot of people that I've worked with.
So just to be clear, Nelson Nash, and this is the, like, he's like the godfather of infinite banking, right? I mean, he's the progenitor of the concept. That's the first time I was exposed to the concept. That, you know, Nelson was referenced as the OG. And so maybe we start there. I want to talk about your personal history, but just as to create context for the conversation, maybe you can talk a little bit about the history of infinite banking, Nelson Nash, that work. Yeah, I have more questions, but I'll stop there.
Yeah. Okay. So this Nelson really kind of discovered this. It's always existed. And, you know, this concept has really been around for a long time, but it wasn't formalized. A lot of wealthy people, banks, corporations, they've used this concept for a long time, but they don't really want to share it with us. That's weird. So Nelson, back in around 1980, he was in trouble. He had $500,000 worth of debt at 23%. And you can imagine the interest on that, how it was killing him on his real estate investing. And you know, people that are real estate investors today, they think we're in a high interest rate environment right this minute. But back then, 23%, I mean, prime was like 19% or something crazy, right? And so Nelson, in the middle of the night, Nelson's, you know, God-fearing man, he's on his knees and he's praying like, God, show me a way out of this. And the answer came that his brother was in the insurance business and he had sold him these insurance policies. And Nelson could get an 8% loan back then on the insurance policy. And so he said, well, I'll just borrow the money, pay it back. And that's kind of how it started. And then he realized all the power and control that he had with these insurance contracts and that the insurance company wasn't training him how to use it like a bank or like a money pool. But, and there was nobody out there teaching it. He looked for it, but it wasn't like today where you could Google stuff and there's YouTube and everything else. And he started to develop this. And he started, because he was a forester and because his economic point of view was Austrian, he was very free market, contracts between free people, all of that. I mean, he was very hardcore in the Austrian economics, and this fit perfectly. So he just started to develop it, and then he wrote a book called Becoming Your Own Banker, Unleashing the Infinite Banking Concept by R. Nelson Nash. And that 92-page book, Jeff, changed everything because it was the blueprint for the basics. Mm-hmm. Like, this is why we need to be our own banker, right? And the philosophy and the human nature. And it was all of those things in that book. And the book is brilliant. It is the book that you got to read to understand the basics of infinite banking. Now, I'd like to give your audience a free gift. Is if you send me your best mailing address, If you email me your best mailing address, I'd like to give anybody in the audience a free copy of this book. It's because I feel so strongly about it. You don't ever have to call me, talk to me, anything else. Just everyone needs to see this book. So yeah.
Oh, no. Sorry. Continue, please.
So that's kind of how Nelson, because he was so passionate about it, he would do these 10-hour seminars. And he would walk people through the concepts in the book. And that's where I met him, is at one of those seminars in Texas. And I was kind of amazed. Like, I was in the financial services business, so my paradigm was in cement, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, but the more that I talked to Nelson, and he was so gracious and such a gentleman. So, you know, he's from Birmingham, Alabama, so he's a Southern gentleman. And he just kept on explaining it to me. He really evangelized this concept.
So let's actually maybe kind of dig into something you said there too, which was this juxtaposition of the traditional financial services mindset with this infinite banking concept. Again, I consider myself, obviously I wasn't nearly as early into it as you, but I mean, I was exposed to this concept in 2009.
Yep.
Which was fortunately right when I was having a turnaround and I actually started having meaningful cash flows that I needed to figure out what to do with. And so this has been a, you know, part of the bedrock of my financial life now for whatever that is, 14 years.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, a lot longer than most people I hear talking about it, but you're, like I said, like an OG, but
Yeah. Even
still. And I have a fair amount of experience in the world of traditional money management and financial advisory services. My dad was an institutional stockbroker most of the time I was growing up, managing, you know, doing trading for pensions and big institutional investors. And then he started a wealth management practice. And I have, you know, his network of people that I'm in touch with and I talk to. And like, even people that like I know, like, and trust and consider to be extremely intelligent stewards of money, they act like you're like you have like three heads when you talk about this. So maybe we could talk, you know, pause there. Like, why is that? And because, I'm sure there's, let me just say, I'm sure there's a lot of people listening to this who've probably been given advice that is dissuading them from whole life or universal life or whatnot that are kind of the foundations of this strategy. So yeah, take it from there, please.
Yeah. So the best way to answer that question, Jeff, is to kind of tell you a little bit about my professional story. And I started off as a financial planner, as a fee-based, full-service financial planner. I had $700 million under management. Back then, we charged 1%. I got 1%. I mean, I had staff and everything, so it's not as great as it sounds. But I did everything that I was told. And I was told that the way that you make money is in Wall Street.
And how long ago was this?
That's starting in 1988.
Okay.
So for 15 years, from 1988 to 2003, I had a financial services practice. Now, I started transitioning away from that during meeting Nelson, all of that. But I still had this firm. And you know, it's hard to accept that everything that we've been taught about money when we're children and in school is wrong. Mm-hmm. And the way that I discovered it is, and you got to remember back then, there was no Excel spreadsheets, CRMs. I mean, I went and I calculated, I got something in about one of our platforms, and it said our clients over the last 10 years had gotten 9.38% on their money. Well, I had money in that. And you know, it didn't seem like my CAGR, my compound annual growth rate, was 9.38%, because using the rule of 72s, I knew my money should have been doubling a lot faster than it was.
Mm-hmm.
So I analyzed it, and after fees, expenses, taxes, it was 4%.
So actually, if we could pause right there, rule of 72, what Jim's saying is this is a heuristic for doubling of money, that you divide an interest rate into 72, and that tells you how many years it'll take to double. So you're saying at a 9% annualized rate of return, your money should have been doubling every 8 years.
Absolutely. But
it wasn't, clearly.
Okay. It wasn't. Not even close. Now, divide that into 4%.
Yeah.
And you can see why it wasn't, because that's actually what was happening. So everything that you see from Wall Street is average rate of return. You're averaging 12%. You're averaging 10%. You think, wow, that's pretty good. But it's not your actual rate of return. It's noise. So much in our lives about money is noise. And it's designed to get money to flow away from you, right? We see 5,000 ads a day. You know, the logo on my shirt, the logo on your shoes. We see 5,000 ads, and they're all designed to get money to flow away from us.
Can I just say something real quick for the audience? Because this, like, it's so simple, but it's so profound. And I'll use the simplest example I can think of. If you have, on year zero, you invest your money, and you lose year one, you lose 50%. And then year two, you gain 100%. How much money do you have? Obviously, the same amount you started with, right? Yeah. But your average rate of return is 25%. Because
25%.
100 minus 50 is 50 divided by 2 years. You say, oh, I made 25% a year, and yet you have the same amount of money you started with. That's how they can be deceptive with average rates of return, because the weighting of the rates, the timing of the rates, like, it's not a simple math equation. So, sorry. Go ahead.
No, Jeff, that's a great point. I'm glad you brought up that point. And, you know, so you look at it and you say, well, I'm averaging 25%, but I didn't actually earn anything. You talk to your broker and he says, well, you're averaging 25%. And so, but now think about it the way most people put money in Wall Street. They put it in their 401k, right through their 401k. So you're putting in a few hundred dollars, a few thousand dollars, whatever it is every month, doesn't matter. So it's like boiling the frog. I mean, you don't realize that you're not gaining that much. But you look at, oh, my average rate of return, 9.38%. That's pretty good. But it's not.
And by the way, you're also losing the purchasing power of whatever the rate of inflation is. So even if you're doing 8%, I mean, nowadays that would be basically breaking even.
So let's go there, Jeff. I'm going to ask you three questions, not about 401ks or anything else. I'm just going to ask you three general questions.
Okay.
Are taxes going up or down?
I believe they will be going up dramatically.
Because of math with Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, and the interest on the debt, taxes have to go up somewhere.
The interest on the debt has gone up $500 billion in the last 90 days. How about that?
Yeah. Levels? Crazy. Okay, so that comes to my next question. Taxes are going up. The dollars in your pocket today, are they worth more today or in the future?
They're worth more today.
You're right. When I was a kid, I'm a lot older than you, but I could buy 5 candy bars for a dollar. Mm-hmm. Now I don't think I could buy one, right? So the dollars in my pocket, the good dollars, are going down in value in the future. Last question. Now, this is a farming question, so it's tough. No, I'm just kidding. Would you rather pay tax on the seed or on the harvest?
You'd pay tax on the harvest.
No, you want to pay, but would you rather pay tax on the seed, the little amount, or the harvest, the big amount?
Oh, you would rather, yeah, pay tax on the seed, of course.
So the answers that you just gave, 401ks, violate all of those answers. Okay. I mean, if it's a Roth 401k, then okay, the last question, right. we'll give you that one. But think about this. Would you ever put money in a business or real estate or anything else not knowing the tax consequences?
No.
But the government expects you to put money in that 401k for 20, 30, 40 years. You can't touch it without penalty and tax. And they're not going to tell you what the tax rate's going to be in the future. So your money babysitter, your financial planner, they say, Jeff, you're going to be in a lower tax bracket when you retire than you are today. Now, I'm telling you, audience, if somebody tells you that, shake their hand, tell them that you're taking your money somewhere else. That is not the goal. The goal is to have more money in retirement than and I hate that word retirement. The definition of retirement is to be taken out of service. Okay, if you're in your 20s and 30s, you don't want to wait till you're 65 to stop working or stop exchanging time for money. You want to do it as fast as you can. Do it in your 20s. Do it in your 30s, right? But as soon as you create cash flow by being an entrepreneur and buying businesses and buying real estate and buying whatever other things you're interested in, you just want to stop exchanging time for money. That's all we want, right? We want our assets to provide our ideal standard of living, not your minimum standard of living, your ideal standard of living. So 401ks, that's the last place. But it's three entities that suck our money away. Banks, Wall Street, and the government. Those three entities enslave you financially. You are a financial slave. We all are. Which is harsh, right?
Yeah. So first of all, I mean, to the audience out there, if you guys have read my book, Unlock Your Potential, that obviously aligns with this show, you've read my unpacking of the broken system. And I feel like Jim is picking up where I sort of leave off, which is to dig even deeper into the banking and the financial system. And if you've read my book, I mean, I actually, Jim, just so you know, you probably haven't read my book, but I do a pretty thorough, I think I do in the book. I don't know. I've written so much. I forget what I put in the book and what I put elsewhere. You're probably experiencing that too.
Yeah.
To publish a book, but I've done it in multiple formats, a pretty thorough unpacking of how the United States financial system in its current form was created in the early 20th century. Paul Warburg, Nelson Aldrich brought, you know, Paul Warburg, the German banker, brought over the Prussian, you know, the Frankfurt banking school over here, which was created right after Otto von Bismarck invented this concept of retirement. And they created all these financial products around retirement. And that's how the bankers got so rich. And they're like, well, we should do that here too. And then a bunch of stuff ensues from there. You know, the taxation of income, the Social Security Act, the creation of the benefit state. And like, we could literally talk for, I'm confident you and I could geek for hours on just the history here.
Yep.
But hopefully the audience is willing to take us at face value that there is a conspiratorial design to the United States financial system. And all we're talking about is just evidence that's right out in the open.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. The first time somebody watches or reads The Creature from Jekyll Island, they think, oh, this guy's crazy.
Yeah.
They don't believe it. Yeah. Like, that can't be. That can't be really how it happened, or this is, I mean, that can't be really what this does. But if what you thought to be true turned out not to be true, when would you want to know about it?
Yeah.
Right now, right? As soon as possible. And you know, I always think about this, and I want to read your book. I definitely am going to read your book because I love everything that you just said. But I kind of feel like, Jeff, let's say that you and I were going to the movies and we drive up to the movies and there's two movies playing. One is An Inconvenient Truth, and now not Al Gore's Inconvenient Truth about climate change, but just An Inconvenient Truth. And the other movie theater is playing A Reassuring Lie. Mm. Where's the line? It's in The Reassuring Lie, because there's something about our human nature that says, hey, what I'm doing doesn't seem right, but if we're all going down, we're all going down together.
Yeah.
And I don't have the confidence to stand in that inconvenient truth line alone. Unless I got somebody like you or me who's going to stand there with me, who's going to guide me through this and educate me about the truth. Because if you know what's happening, then you'll know what to do.
So I feel like this might actually be a nice pivot point into a deeper question that I have for you, which I'll just sort of set up by saying, like, I believe in alignment with what you're saying, that ability to stand alone in truth. I mean, this is why public speaking, people are more afraid of public speaking than death, because public speaking is the experience of being isolated and separated from the tribe and having the whole tribe looking at you.
Right.
And that's literally, like, to your point, people would rather die as part of a group than live alone, than live in opposition to a group. Many people said.
Yeah.
And I believe that the tolerance, literally calibrating your nervous system to be able to tolerate that experience is one of the biggest requirements and predictors of success. So I always dig, and by the way, on my show, I interview outliers of success, right? You know, celebrities, athletes, all tons of entrepreneurs primarily. And so I'm always really interested in where people feel like they, or how people feel like, how, when, where, even from whom, did people develop that ability to tolerate being, you know, to tolerate life on the road less traveled that other people seem so terrified of. So, and particularly your book, which I was able to read a little bit of in the last 24 hours, and I'm like riveted and can't wait to finish it. But I mean, your origin story is nuts. Yeah. So I wonder if we could dig into that a little bit, and maybe Absolutely. You could self-assess for like, where did you get these freaking cojones to just be different and not lose yourself?
Yeah. You know, so like you said, Jeff, if you read the beginning of the book, you know, I have five siblings that are natural siblings, and I was a middle child and I was given up for adoption. And I was given up for adoption because my mom said that she was raped and her husband thought she had an affair. I, you know, not to give anything away in the book, but I found out about 3 or 4 years ago that from 23andMe and another sibling that he was actually my father. Regardless, I grew up in foster care. I grew up in an abusive home. Once I got adopted at 7, we were definitely in poverty in Los Angeles. I've stood in line for government cheese. I've gotten free lunch my whole entire school career. I mean, or my schooling all the way through high school. And I hated my circumstances. I was very angry and you know, I was a horrible student. I hated school. I loved to learn, but I hated school. But what I did is I didn't have anything to lose. I mean, so when I would go to like at other nicer parts of town and you know how teenage boys are, you know, there'd be some challenge or whatever. I was like, dude, I have nothing to lose. Let's do it. You know, like, and so I learned to take action, whether that was on in sports, and I just felt like I had nothing to lose. And I equated people that had money and people that didn't have money, I equated their worth from that. So I didn't have anything, so I felt worthless, right? And I thought the thing that separates those people that live up in, so where I grew up in Inglewood, I grew up in that area, LA County, and we bounced around a lot, as you can imagine. But I don't know how many miles away, Palos Verdes is, but it's not that far. So I would drive my car as a teenager through Palos Verdes when I wanted to escape my neighborhood. And I would look at these houses and I would think, one family lives in these houses? I just didn't get it. Like, what makes them have this and everybody in my neighborhood have nothing? What is it? And I just created this passion that, and I started visualizing. Now I thought I was like the only person doing this, and I would make up stories in my head of what my future was going to look like. I thought I was like crazy, right? I thought like, well, like, okay, you're making fantasy up in your head what's going to happen. But no, what I did is I was planting seeds in my head of what I wanted. I didn't want to live there. I wanted to live and have the things that these people in Palos Verdes had. And if you're from Palos Verdes, I'm sure it's not as perfect as it was in my head, but in my head, it was perfect, okay? So not having anything to lose gave me an advantage when I got into business. I wasn't afraid. I've been homeless before. I've had nothing. If I didn't succeed, it didn't bother me. I just kept going. I knew that the one thing that got me out of LA was action and just to keep going. But there's also, Jeff, I enjoyed the opposition. I learned, that took time. I learned to enjoy the process. It's like going and working out, and like you feel like you're going to throw up the first day. If you're doing cross training or functional training or something, you go, whoa, couldn't do that every day. And then 3 or 4 weeks later, you're doing it every day, right? Because it's specific adaptations to impose demands. Your body, your brain will adapt. And I just learned that at a young age. And I just, you know, I started reading every book that I could get my hands on. You know, The Magic of Thinking Big, Think and Grow Rich, How to Win Friends and Influence People, The Strangest Secret. I mean, everything that you can think of, anything that you can name, I read it in my 20s. I also learned how to speak, not like an inner city kid, but like a business person. And to some degree at 58, I guess I do. But so I think that was the thing, is it's taking action. Action cures fear. So anything you're afraid of, just take action.
Yeah, I was listening to, it's a really good interview. Ed Milet recently had Alex Hormozi on his show. And one of the things Alex was saying was that, like, it doesn't matter how you feel about certain actions. If you just take them until, you know, consistently and until dot, 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 they lead to success. You don't have to feel a certain way. You don't have to be a certain way. You don't have to exhibit certain, you just take the damn actions consistently until, and how liberating is that? It doesn't matter how I grew up. It doesn't matter how I feel about it. It doesn't matter if I feel confident or secure or if anybody's impressed. It's just the action. I love that you said, it's just the freaking actions.
Yeah.
Okay. So then if you would, maybe like, let's reconnect to the story. So by the way, a $700 million private wealth management business in the late 80s, early 90s is a very, very successful practice.
Yeah.
And you meet this guy who's spouting these ideas that completely contravene mainstream financial, you know, teaching, let's say. Yep. And maybe pick back up from there. Your willingness to be contrarian kicks in, fortunately.
So yeah, and Nelson taught me the majority's never been right about anything. So that you gotta accept those truths, right? So I'm sitting in downtown Denver in a high rise overlooking the mountains. It's a beautiful office. I don't know what the building is, but I call it the cash register building. It's very famous in Denver skyline. And this friend of mine whose dad was a financial planner, kind of like your dad, a wealth manager. Mm-hmm. And he took over his practice. This guy's killing it. You know, he's making seven figures. He's happy as can be. And he's got these black books stacked up on his bookshelf in his lobby. So I grab one and he goes, oh, you can have that. It doesn't work. So this is Nelson's book, Becoming Your Own Banker. And I go, I thumb through it and I go, oh, that's a nice way for somebody to sell life insurance. Okay, cool. Okay, I don't really want that. And then a friend of mine,
by the way, I think you just honed in on one of the most common criticisms of like, oh, this IBC concept was entirely contrived as a way to sell life insurance.
Yeah. And by the way, Jeff, I'm not saying there aren't guys out there that are using it to sell more life insurance. Yeah. They're not teaching people how to become their own bankers, and they're not teaching freedom. Okay, money gives you choices, choices give you freedom. My message is freedom. I want everyone in the audience to be more free than you are today, right? Wherever you're at, I want you to feel more free tomorrow, because I know that's the road to happiness and true wealth and true just feeling worthy and feeling like your worth is high, right? So I thumb through the book again and I'm like, well, I'm going to Texas and this guy's teaching this. I have this meeting, but on the Friday and Saturday after the meeting, he's going to be in town teaching this. And I somehow got on his list of stuff. And so I'm like, okay, I'm going to go. So I go and I'm there for 10 hours. The whole 10 hours, Jeff, I'm asking myself, this guy's crazy. Like this, I mean, what's he trying to sell me? Where's the pitch coming from? I'm waiting for, like, okay, he's a shyster. This is what it is. It's just to sell more life insurance. And now I got to go through him or something. And, you know, he's going to make a bunch of money. Never came. So I went up and I talked to him afterwards. And he never answered a question just with a direct answer. He always gave you something to think about or something to do, something to research. And I was like, okay. And he said, Jim, you're in the financial services business. Your paradigm, more than anyone else's, is locked. You can't accept what I'm saying. It's going to take you more time. And I was like, no. You know, like, I know how to do this stuff, right? And he goes, I'm doing the same seminar again in 2 weeks. Come back. And I'm like, okay, yeah, I wasn't a great student. Maybe I need the remedial track, you know? And so I came back in 2 weeks, and it was about halfway through that second seminar, I went, this guy's brilliant. Mm-hmm. And he's on to something. And it's a total paradigm shift. It's totally different way of looking at insurance. And it's not even about the insurance. You know, I'm showing you how to be free, and you need this big insurance policies to do that. It's kind of like the iPod. I'm not selling you a little iPod. I'm selling you all these songs, right? I'm selling you this thing for your brain, and you need to buy the iPod to get it.
Right.
It's the same concept. Everybody that's on the internet, on YouTube and Instagram selling infinite banking and talking about the insurance contract, they're wrong. It's not about the insurance contract. It's about what the insurance contract allows you to do. It's just a money pool. Mm-hmm. Happens to be a tax invisible money pool that you control. And because you have it, you get to go use other people's money to go build your wealth. Okay. But that's what banks do. Banks get you to deposit money in their bank, and they take your money and they loan it to somebody else at a big multiple from what they have to pay you. And they take your money and they make money with it, right? And there's only one banking system in the world. So in reality, they're taking your money, loaning it back to you at a multiple. So they're making a big multiple with your money from you.
And by the way, they're allowed to loan out, I can't remember if it's $9 or $10 for every dollar you deposit.
Yeah.
So they're making a premium rate of interest with a markup on 10 times the amount of money that they have in capital reserves from your deposit.
Fractional reserve lending, right? So fractional reserve banking is the central bank, which is not the Federal Reserve, is our central bank in the United States, which is not federal. Okay. It's owned by really the 15 largest banks. It was set up privately on Jekyll Island, right?
But yeah, I'll just say, there's a lot of books to read, and that one's really thick, but
it is.
G. Edward Griffin, The Creature from Jekyll Island, is like, it'll change your life. I mean, it'll forever change the way you see the world, not just money.
Yeah. Because you have to accept that, you know what, banks have, so right now, everything that's going on in the world, banks are financing both sides of every war in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Banks get rich in war. That's why there always will be war. And banks want there to be war. Banks are evil the way that not your friends that work at the bank, but the banking system is evil. And so, you know, I meet this guy and it hit me. But there was a story in there. Is in his seminar, and it's brief, but he talked about buying an airplane. He was a pilot. And he talked about, well, hey, my friends that I bought the airplane with, they wanted to finance it through the bank. And I asked them if it would be okay if I financed it. The airplane made money. So now it's a cash flowing asset that Nelson's financing, right? So he's the bank for that little LLC or corporation that owned the airplane and leased it out when they weren't using it. He's the bank. And then he talked about how that cash flowing asset, he just flowed it back into the insurance contract and then did it again and again and again and again with real estate. That's what he did. That's what hit me. all these people are teaching infinite banking to go buy your cars and all this other stuff, and that's cool. But when you go buy cash flowing assets with it, game changer. I can show you how you would accelerate your financial freedom in an amazing, amazing way. So that was like the mind-blowing thing to me, Jeff. So I started studying. I started saying, well, you know what? Out of all my $700 million under management, how did people really become wealthy? Did they do it in Wall Street? And I went to every paper application and I came up with two things. The people that really had money, I threw out all the people that got lucky, by the way. If you were the janitor at whatever cable company back in the day was like the thing that blew up, right? You got to remember how far back this is. I threw that out, but it came down to two things: business ownership and real estate.
Mm-hmm.
Which, if you are a real estate investor, I have news for you. You're in the real estate business. So it's really business ownership. So then I said to myself, okay, Jim, you got to go find a business to buy with this infinite banking concept and prove that it works. Well, I had all these business owners that were clients of mine. I told them everything that I just told you, and they said, well, what do we do? I said, we got to take over the banking function. And they said, well, look, do you want a partner? And so I've used this concept to buy over 30 businesses using the infinite banking concept. And so that's what I started doing. And then I started teaching people how to do that, right? And I would say, people that are listening to you and reading your books and being coached by you on how to be an entrepreneur, this is how you flow your money, right? Yes, you should be an entrepreneur. Yes, it's going to suck in the beginning, right? I can tell you lots of stories of my businesses. I mean, last week I sent $75,000 to two businesses just because of timing and everything else. But guess what? They're paying me between 12 and 20% to be the bank, which I have no problem with that. But I started doing that, and I started building just like any other entrepreneur. So what I advocate for is you're in two businesses, whatever you do as an entrepreneur and the banking business. And that's where IBC comes in, infinite banking concept.
So one of the, you know, I'm thinking back to my journey of having this concept sort of unlocked and made desirable to me, and it is. It's like a slow dawning that moves in fits and starts. Right, you'll have like a moment of clarity, and you're like, "Oh yeah, that like the understanding how annualized rate of return is a super manipulatable statistic." That was a big like moment for me, and then I kind of like stalled out in my understanding. And then I think another big one for me that maybe you can speak on, and I think it actually speaks to the bias that a lot of finance people have, is like even the fixation on rate of return itself, rather than asking on what percentage of my total cash flow, meaning all the income I make from my job, my businesses, my alimony, my tax refund, my whatever, on what percentage of all of that money in my personal economy am I actually able to earn a rate of return?
Yeah.
You know, it's like we're only looking at the numerator, not the denominator, you know, so to speak. And that was a big breakthrough concept for me, because, you know, I think the annual savings rate, I actually think it's probably negative right now. But I mean, historically, it's like people save one less than 5% of their money, generally like 1 or 2% of their money. And then they're building their whole future on this idea that this, you know, a penny of every dollar I earn is going to compound at this great rate that's going to, you know, using 1% of my money, I'm going to someday pay for 100% of my life. Rather than like, what if you could run a third of all your money through these policies, and maybe that's a lower rate, but it's 30 times as much money.
Right.
But maybe you volume. Can speak to that. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's volume of interest versus interest rate. It's always about the volume, right? And if you think about it, Jeff, would you rather earn interest on what you spend or interest on what you save?
Of course, most people spend a lot more than they save.
That's right. So, the average person pays around 40% of your net income in interest. Now you would say, somebody's saying, I'm not paying 40% interest. No, volume of interest. And I'll give you an example. In the first 5 years of a mortgage, what percentage goes to the bank in the form of interest, and what percentage goes to you in the form of principal?
If it's a 30-year mortgage, yeah, go ahead. You're going to answer.
80, 85%, right? Let's just say somewhere in there. All right. So you earn a dollar, and you have to give somebody, well, and let's just say it over 30 years, okay? You keep that mortgage for 30 years. You buy a $300,000 house if you could find one, and you're going to pay $600,000 for that house over 30 years. And you have a 3% interest rate, and you think, man, I'm killing it, right? But that means that over 30 years, 50% of what you pay goes to the bank's benefit, and 50% goes to your benefit. So where's your 3% interest, right? It doesn't matter. The interest rate is a distractor.
Right.
It's like, hey, look at this. It's all shiny and it's cool. But now think about that. That's not good enough for the bank. Here's what the bank does, is they give you that rate. And then after 5 years, they give you a big smile when you come into the bank, and they give you a call and they say, Jeff, hey, only for our best customers, but I can lower your rate. Mm-hmm. I'm going to lower your rate. It's going to save you $200 a month on your payment. Is there any reason why you wouldn't want to do that? No, I mean, and look, Jeff, we've already pre-approved you. We don't, you know, you don't have to pay for appraisals, anything else. Great, where do I sign? And they start your amortization over again. Because in the first 5 years, it's not 50%. Like we said, it's 80, 85%. The bank's not happy with 50%. They want 80 to 85% of everything coming in to go to their benefit, and very little to go to your benefit.
Yeah, or you're killing it in life, and after 5 years, you're like, honey, we're buying a new house.
Absolutely right.
Reset the clock.
Reset the clock.
I mean, most people, you know, own multiple residences throughout their life. I actually wonder if this statistic is available. Not in aggregate, like to your point, but what percentage of the average annual mortgage payment made by a homeowner is interest versus principal?
I'm going to bet
it's got to be 80.
I was going to say, I bet it's 75, 80%. It's got to be. And so think about this. In 2016, okay, Bank of America's interest expense was 0.2%. And their interest expense was 0.2%. Their interest income was 5.2%. Okay, so you put $10,000 in Bank of America. Over the next year, they're going to pay you $20 of interest, and they're going to earn from their average borrower 5.2%. Now, in our consumer brains, we say, well, the bank only made $500 more than me, no big deal. But in the audience, we have a lot of entrepreneurs who understand how a business works. And how a business works is $20 is our cost, $520 is our profit. We divide our cost into our profit, it goes 26 times. That means our profit on not reloaning that stuff out and creating velocity money, just on that one loan is 2,600%. Not fractional reserve bank.
Right. Which just turns it into 26,000% because now they can do it 10 times off the same $10,000.
Exact. And guess who's paying the 2,600%? You are.
Mm-hmm.
Now, all infinite banking does is that transaction. There's three people in that transaction. You have the depositor, the owner of the bank, not your buddy that works there, and you have the borrower. It just builds a wall around that. You're all three entities. Mm. Now, what you do with your bank, that's where you need a coach. That's where you need somebody that's got 14 years experience doing it, not somebody that knows how to make a YouTube video. Okay. Right? It's hey, how do I take that banking system that has this infinite potential and create the best life for me, where I'm free, where I do what I want to do when I want to do it, and I have plenty of money without exchanging time for money.
So I'm curious, what kind of it does, I mean, I have seen this concept appear more and more in like popular media channels and whatnot. It's not quite as anathema as it used to be. But there still seems to be deeply entrenched resistance to it. And I'm curious, like, because, you know, to me, again, going back to my personal experience, once you peel all the layers back, it, you know, at the core is just truth. Like, it's math and it's truth and it's history and it's these incontrovertible realities that are like, okay, you know, I'm not going to die on the hill of being wrong when I can clearly see that I am, right? But yet, I'm sure you get it all the time. Like, tell me what the haters say about all this right now.
Yeah, the haters say, it's always around the insurance contract, is, well, you're borrowing your own money. No, you're not. And you have to pay for this insurance contract. You're behind the first couple of years. That's true.
Yeah.
But, you know, you want to start first or you want to finish first? You know, when you start a business, you make an investment. We're going to be the owner of the business. We're going to get the profit and the interest. And over time, kill it.
And by the way, your 401k and your IRA, that's locked up till you retire. It's not like you have access to all that money the first
year. Yeah, when you have a financial emergency or opportunity, that's not the first place people go.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I mean, I had a lady the other day that was a doctor who said, Jim, you know, I want to buy this building and put my practice in my own building, but my financial babysitter said that a self-directed IRA, which I've got an IRA, is really complicated. And I said, no, it's not. It's not complicated at all, but he can't make any money off of that.
Right.
So no, he doesn't want you to do that. So the thing is it's taking action and taking personal responsibility. Freedom takes personal responsibility. And so you can do it. You're not going to have to do it alone. Find a guide, find a coach that'll help you. If you want to go start a business, then guess what? Find somebody who started a business or multiple businesses and let them help you eliminate some of the mistakes. And that's the infinite banking concept goes along with all of that. I could show you how to run your business using the infinite banking concept. Invest in real estate, invest in businesses. So if you don't mind, I'd like to just give you an example of a business that I bought that I think your audience, especially being entrepreneurs, would like. Is so there was this little logistics business refurbished. They did refurbishment and did some forward logistics. It was a small company, and this bigger company that owned it, they were more like an eBay kind of company for accredited buyers. Like they would give you a limit on how much you could spend. Mm-hmm. And it was a cool business, and they just got a $50 million VC infusion. But this little business didn't fit in their mold. And, you know, when they get a $50 million VC infusion, you know, the audience knows they're going to try to sell that business in 3 to 5 years for three to five times what they put in. Okay, so they wanted to sell this business, $3.3 million. And I said, okay, a friend of mine worked there. He ran it. I wanted him to keep his job and them not just shut it down. But I said, look, I'll buy it on an earnout basis. I'll give you no money up front. I'm not going to pay anything for 2 years because, again, remember, I know they're going to sell it. And if you sell it, I don't owe you a dollar, mm-hmm. right? They said, no, the board won't go for that. And I said, okay, but I'm going to give you the $3.3 million. It just has to be, I'm going to give you 20%. Of the increased revenue, right? Because this business is going to blow up, according to you. So anyway, we settled on this. I gave him $75,000 cash and $3.3 million. I didn't have to start paying them for 2 years. If the business sold, I didn't have to pay them anything. Great, right? If it didn't sell, then I have to pay them 20% of the revenue. What I did is we went in and we looked at this business. We found $400,000 of profit in old inventory that was just sitting there in the warehouse. $12 speaker bars, I mean, just stuff like that, right? And we sold it all on Amazon, and we made $400,000 profit. I bought that business August 1 of that year, and we made $400,000 by year end in my pocket. Okay, so I say to people, what's my rate of return? and they say, well, you take the $75,000 and you divide it into the four. No, I didn't have $75,000 in that business. I had interest on $75,000 for 4 months, which is about $3,700. I had $3,700 in there. I made $400,000. But did I put any money in there? No, because I made enough money to pay the insurance company their interest. I didn't pay a dollar. My customers paid for that business, just like your tenants would pay for the insurance contract. So all the money going in the insurance contract, I'm not paying that. My tenants, my customers, they're all paying that. And, you know, that business is still, I still own it today, 100% of it now, and it's making money. And I have great people running it. And it's, I never, knock on wood, I never have to take a phone call on it.
Hey there, real quick. I just wanted to let you know, I have been concentrating a lot lately on providing tons of value to my text message community. This could be random thoughts. This could be letting you be the first to know about an event I'm planning or a special I'm running or a free training I'm hosting. Anyway, just shoot me a text to get subscribed. The number is 702-996-3926. Thanks so much. Let's get back to the podcast.
So I'll share one more of the big aha concepts for me that was part of the chain of really getting this for the audience too. And then and you can speak on it. And then I'd love you to share about your book. I know you have a book.
Yeah.
But it was the idea of collateral, right? Like, why on this earth, you know, you're going to be the bank. When you go to a bank, immediately the conversation is about collateral. Why on this earth would an insurance company or even this idea of like, well, you're not actually borrowing your own money back out. And people assume that, well, I put money in, so if I take it out, I'm taking my money out. But you're not. You're actually taking a loan against collateral, but the collateral only materializes if you die, because it's the death benefit of the policy is essentially the collateral. So maybe you could speak to that piece of it to sort of help people understand that it's not your money you're pulling out and you're not having to post material collateral.
So what you do is you're going to take a loan from, and this is where insurance agents and new people to IBC get confused, is you're not borrowing your money, you're borrowing the insurance company's money. They'll give you that money all day long. They have to. There's no application. You don't have to tell them that you're going to pay it back. You don't actually have to pay it back because they have your cash value as 100% collateral. It's 100% safe, but you are an owner of that insurance company if it's a mutual insurance company and you're a policyholder, okay? Which means you have certain contractual rights. One is you can borrow up to 100% of your cash value anytime you want. Just tell them to send me my money. And it's an interest-only loan. Okay, now think about that for a second. Now I have other people's money. I have use and control of it. I'm in control. I don't have to pay it back. I can pay it back the way that I want to. I can do whatever I want. I'm in control. That's exactly what a bank does. They take depositors' money. They have other people's money. They have use and control of it, and they go make money with it. Now you go do the same thing. You go make money with it. You can flow it back in the insurance contract if you want. You can keep it out. But this is the kind of loan that it is. Jeff, if I would loan you $100 million today, and your only obligation to me is you got to pay me 5% interest 1 year from today, would you take the loan?
Yeah, 100%.
Right. So let's say that you made me that offer, Jeff. And if you want to, we could talk after the show. But you're going to loan me $100 million. And here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to take that and I'm going to go buy $500 million worth of real estate from a seller. I'll get the seller to carry the other 80% or a bank if I have to use the bank for that. And when I buy real estate, I want to get at least a 25% cash on cash return after debt load. Now, my experienced clients say 40%. My inexperienced clients think it's around 15%. Doesn't really matter. Let's just use the 25%. So I call you in a year and I say, hey, Jeff, I got your check. And I'd love to fly from Florida to your hometown and give you that check and take you to dinner. I take you to dinner. Now, remember, I got 5% on your $100 million, and I only have to pay you five. So I give you a $5 million check, and you say, hey, Jim, do you want to pay any principal? And I say, No, see you next year. And I'll do that forever, right?
Mm-hmm.
Why would I ever pay back the loan? Now, what am I going to, if I, with the infinite banking concept, I would put the $20 million in the insurance contract and I would keep using it over and over and over again and creating velocity of money. So it's your system. You're in control. Whoever controls the money makes the money. That's a rule.
And by the way, and let's answer the question that may be in everyone's mind. What happens? Like, what do you mean I don't have to pay it back? It's a loan. What happens to it? So until, if and when we die.
Yeah.
And then the insurance company gets it back. Because remember, this was life insurance.
Yeah. Yeah. And what happens, though, is you end up with a series of policies. Because if you're going and buying cash flowing assets, then all that money is flowing back in the insurance contract. And the problem that you have is it won't fit under current insurance law. So you have to stay within certain limits called the MEC line, modified endowment contract. It's got to stay life insurance. Right. But you'll get too much money flowing back to you from your tenants and your customers. So then we have to get more and more policies so that we have more volume and capacity for our banking system. Because if you're going to have a banking system, you want a little one or a big one.
As your cash flow increases, your insurability increases, where you now qualify for larger and larger amounts of life insurance, which opens up that next policy. This is why 14 years ago, I started with one of these, and I think I have six now. The newer ones are way bigger than the original. Like I still see the debit going out every month from the original, and it's like, I'm like, oh, it's like paying a bill or something, you know?
Yeah. So what's funny too, Jeff, is you don't have to put the insurance on you.
Right.
Right. If you are in business, I just did this last week on a new employee, not a new employee, but a new employee to Infinite Banking who's 30 years old. Mm-hmm. So I'm 58. Somebody says, well, I'm too old to do this. No, well, I just bought a policy on a 30-year-old. I own it and he's the insured. I'm the beneficiary, the company is. And so I have total control of it. All he does is he's the insured. He has no rights to the death benefit, the cash value, anything. Or I also insure my children, my grandchildren. And so now I'm building this legacy that's at least three generations in the future.
Yeah, insure your kids. Sorry, go ahead.
People have been doing forever.
Yeah, now like I want to make sure everybody gets that. The Rockefellers, the Vanderbilts, the Carnegies, Jim Oliver nor Nelson Nash did not invent this concept.
No, it's been around forever.
They just put a label on it and said, "Hey, this could help. You don't have to be a billionaire for this to be a value." It's basically the breakthrough.
That's a breakthrough. It's bringing it down to a you and me level. You don't have to be a Rockefeller, like you said, to do this. We want to teach it to everybody. People that have money, people that don't have money, people that are going to have money, people in their 20s, people in their 80s. I don't care. We can all do infinite banking.
And by the way, let's talk about those names I just said. And I referenced lightly the creation of the U.S. banking system. Why isn't it interesting that the families that were, I mean, like Nelson Aldridge, I mean, his name, Nelson, comes from Nelson Rockefeller. He was married, I think, to John Rockefeller's daughter. Like, he was a Rockefeller.
Right.
And yet, the senator that drove the creation of the United States financial system came from a family that does not actually primarily bank inside of that system.
Right.
They do this because it is outside the banking system.
Yeah.
So isn't it interesting that the families that drove the creation of the banking system, it's kind of like Congress, right? They have their own health insurance because they know how screwed up ours is. These dynastic families, they had their own banking system that were their own because they knew what they were pawning off on the rest of us.
It's kind of like if you ran a tobacco company and if you were smart, you wouldn't smoke, right?
Yeah.
And exactly. Want everybody else to smoke, but I'm not going to because I'm not stupid.
So anyway, I just wanted to point that out. Can you share a little bit about your book, and then also with the audience, how they can go get deeper into your world, because all we've done here is just barely scratched the surface.
Yeah, so the book is Make Bank Without the Bank. And it's a little bit, the first three chapters are kind of laying out my childhood, my history, how I became passionate about this. And then it's very direct and to the point of these concepts. The book is less than 100 pages. And you can read it quick, but it'll help to start changing that paradigm. And it's going to be it's released November 14th. It's going to be on Audible a couple weeks later. Don't ask me why it's not on the same day. It's just the way that stuff works. And you probably already know that, Jeff, but I don't have the reason why. But the way that you can find out about Infinite Banking right now, today, is go join our community, community.createtailwind, all one word, createtailwind.com. The reason we're called Create Tailwind is everybody is fighting a financial headwind, and we want to show you how to create a tailwind. On there, if you read Nelson's book, which I offered as a free gift to anybody listening to this podcast, if you send me your email and best mailing address, I spend 2 hours and 45 minutes explaining the book to you for free on a course on our community. And what I do is I just educate you about this until you come to one of two things. Hey, this is for me or it's not for me. There's no sales pitch. There's nothing.
Yeah. And I think that's another important thing to know is, like, if people do this, they're not going to sell you the program on how to do that. They shouldn't, because assuming you're a licensed insurance broker, then you'll get paid from the insurance company for helping people set this up. So literally, and I mean, again, I have a guy, it's not Jim, I didn't meet Jim until more recently, but I have a guy that's been helping me with this for well over a decade. And I mean, he takes my calls, he gives me white glove service, like his name might as well be Ritz-Carlton.
Yeah.
I've never paid him a dime.
Right.
Right? But he's helped me set up six policies.
So I'll tell you our business model in 30 seconds, okay, is one, you're just like you just said, you never pay us a dollar. We set up the insurance. Somebody has to set up the insurance. The insurance company's going to pay them a commission. It might as well be the person that's going to coach you just like your guy. Number two is every single person does exactly what Jeff just described. They start off, I don't care if you start off with $1 million a year going into your policy, you will grow it. So I have a repeat customer. Again, I'm just giving you your entrepreneurs, you understand the business model. Not because I want to sell you more and more life insurance contracts. You want more and more money going through your bank rather than somebody else's bank. And the third thing, I never ask anyone for a referral, but all of my clients give me tons of referrals because they're just like you. They're super enthusiastic about it. And they're like, man, this is changing my life. And I feel like I'm in more control. So they refer me to a ton of people without me asking. That's my business model. And I wanted to share that since we're talking to entrepreneurs in the audience. That's my business model. Simple.
It's beautiful. You get paid to help people, but not by the people you're helping.
Exactly. Unlimited coaching.
Yeah.
Right? Because I know the more you understand this concept, the more policies you're going to buy, the more uses you're going to figure out for this. So why wouldn't I want to coach you? I'm going to make revenue. I'm going to get a repeat happy customer. And if you read the beginning of the book, I got all these customers. I could have put 500 or 1,000 people in there, and people, I get emails and they say, hey, I don't want to give you too much credit, but this changed my life. And I was like, no, you take the credit. I'm the guide. You're the hero of this story. You're the one that had the guts, Jeff, to buy these policies in 2009. Not me, not your guy. We're just the guide to help you.
Well, I am really grateful that we got to have this conversation. This is something that, you know, it is a big piece. It's probably this and real estate, which, as you pointed out, they're highly conjoined.
Yeah.
Are the main pillar of my financial life. And I'm just so glad I got to finally flip and talk about it on an episode and share this with, because I'm not an expert. I can't just come on and educate people about this, although I've learned enough to be dangerous. I'm so glad we got to have this conversation, Jim. Really, thank you for being here, and thanks for the work you're doing.
Thank you, and thank you for having me, and thank you for audience to listen a little bit. And if I can do anything to help you, reach out to me. I'd love to.
Of course. Awesome. And of course, to all you viewers and listeners out there, you know what I'm about to say, because you are the very best part of this show. You're why I do it every day, and I'm so glad we got to spend this time together. We'll catch you next time.
Hey, it's Jeff here. If you liked this episode of Unlock Your Potential, it would mean so much if you would like and share the episode on whatever platform you're listening or viewing on. And if you really like what we're doing here and you enjoy this podcast, please consider leaving a review. There is so much work that goes into these episodes, and you leaving a positive review lets us know that that work is reaching people, and especially it helps us reach other people. Your review could be the reason that someone else decides to tune in, check out this podcast, and unlock their potential and ultimately level up the quality of their life. So thank you so much for your support and for listening, especially if you like or share or leave a review. Thank you for helping us spread the word, and thank you for unlocking your potential to go make the world and your world a better place.